This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to another Joy 94.9 podcast.
I am woman, hear me roar, in numbers too big to ignore. Why don't you talk to me?
Good evening, my name is Sue and you're listening to Hear Me Roar, Joy's, my voice has gone already, Joy's all-female current affairs program. Co-hosting with me tonight are Kathy and Lisa, welcome.
Thank you very much. I loved how you said jaw. That's quite cool. Like as in Jaws.
Dun, dun. We're going to talk current affairs and all that sort of stuff. And later on this evening, we're going to be talking to Dr. Cookie from the Lost Dogs Home. We're finding out about what the Lost Dogs Home does. Kathy, what is going on in our world?
Oh, look, you know, 10 million things going on in our world this week. We've got a sports story.
Yeah? Go on.
Everyone was, I don't know how many people are interested in athletics or track and field. You may have heard, may or may not have heard, I don't know if you're living under a rock, you probably wouldn't have heard. The questions still remain over the gender of 800 metre world champion Caster Semenya. She's a South African who was forced to prove she is a woman after her win last week. A group of doctors, including an endocrinologist, a gynaecologist, an internal medicine expert, whatever that is, as well as gender experts, will begin a testing procedure, but it could be months before we know the results. In her home country of South Africa, she landed the other day with 3,000 people greeting her at the airport. And she's had lots of support. South Africa's president, Jacob Zuma, has come out and said she has shown the world that if you are determined to win, nobody and nothing will stop you. So this has been an enormous controversy over the last week about whether or not, because she has a very muscular appearance and a very deep voice, and so when she won the medal and then doing her victory lap, they basically stopped her halfway because nobody was cheering for her.
Really? They actually stopped her? That's
yeah,
a bit cool.
Yeah, and took her off. So
really?
Yeah, it was quite disappointing.
I don't understand, though, why you have an endocrinologist, a gynecologist, an internal medicine, whoever that is, and gender experts. Oh, my goodness, how hard is it to determine? Surely, a blood test or something. I don't know.
Well, chromosome test, you know, the genitalia test.
Yeah, I mean, come
on.
You
would think it would be fairly straightforward. There's probably some people out there listening who have experience with in the intersex community who may be able to shed some light on that and the confusion surrounding it. It's unfortunate, though. I mean, she won by a massive margin, like 20 metres, and she shaved 2.5 seconds off her time or something, which is really unprecedented. So the questions are, well, how can that happen? You know, is she on steroids? Oh, maybe she's a man. And, you know, following on from this whole Lady Gaga having, you know, man bits or lady bits or whatever you'd like to call them, it's kind of topical.
Does that then discriminate against intersex?
Well, I think, you know, Olympic sports are very black and white. There's no, you know, there's very rare that you find transgender people competing and there being no cause of unfairness, because if you are born genetically male and you transition to female, then, you know, the argument is, well, you have some genetic competitive advantage. I can't remember her name. She's a Martina. Someone might be able to remember that. She's a golfer, and she was a trans man who became a woman and quite successful, but competed in the women's division of the PGA. Now golf, you know, I don't know how much of an advantage. And she was a slight little thing. She was a bit of a whippet. Must have been a whippet of a boy.
Yeah,
but,
I hate the golf thing. Well, you know, when the women actually get to tee off, that little bit extra closer. I mean, it's just ridiculous. You go, oh, you're a lady. You can, you know, you've got that extra 10 meters or whatever it is. Stupid.
Yes.
Stupid.
Oh, I don't play golf anymore. It's one of my three top ways for me to, induce a tantrum.
No patience. I've been known to throw a club or two as well.
What's happening with labelling?
Well, the terms gay and straight are becoming increasingly irrelevant to young people, according to a study of students in years 10, 11 and 12 and their sexual habits. Instead, young people are preferring to be more fluid with their sexuality and their labels. Those who identify as gay has dropped by 2% since 2002. But interestingly, those attracted to both sexes has risen by 1.4%. boys are becoming increasingly comfortable confessing their bisexuality, and the likelihood for young men that they'd have a sexual encounter with someone of the same sex also rose from 2% to 8%. Now, labels are a pretty interesting topic when it comes to our community, aren't they? Because a lot of people don't necessarily like to be called gay. They like to be queer or bi, or, you know, there's certain discrimination between labels. What do you reckon?
Look, I'm glad that there's change. I don't like having to fit into a specific label. I don't find it comfortable, but other people find it comfortable saying, yes, you're a lesbian and that's okay.
Yeah, pigeonholing.
And, yeah, pigeonholing. And I guess, Joy, for instance, we got GLBTIQ. You wonder what the next letter will be.
Well, there's GLBTIQQ if you add questioning.
Oh, there you go.
Right? Or P if you want to add pansexual, or, you know, T for tourist, or whatever. I mean, there's a whole...
I don't really think there's a necessity to label anyone, really. I mean, if you're just, you know, happy to be the way you are. I mean, yeah, like you, Sue, I don't like to be labelled. I mean, I've been called soft butch and all sorts of things. So, I mean...
now you're into labels within labels, aren't you? Exactly. That's not just, you know, gay, straight. It's just not black and white anymore, really.
Yeah, I do like the idea. I really hate it when people... And people often say this to me, oh, she's one of yours.
Oh,
you get that, you know, or she bats for your team, you know, and it's kind of like, well, it's locking you into a specific area or pigeonhole. And I think it's great. The kids are growing up with this idea that things change and it's fluid and you can fall in love with a person rather than a sexual identity or, you know, I think it's great. Good for you.
Yeah, and bisexuality is becoming, or, you know, if you want to call it that, I suppose, or experimenting, obviously seems to be, you know, a little bit, the thing to do these days for, you know, school kids. And it's good, I think, that they don't have to worry about being, you know, that there's something wrong with being gay, that they're happy to, and I like the stats say, they're happy to, you know, experiment with different sex. Yes, I know.
The boys, good for you, boys. You're actually saying it's okay to have sex with another boy, protected though, please.
Yeah.
And always the teacher and the mother in me. And, it's great. It's great to see that change happening. I'm really impressed.
We've got a serious story, I guess. The gay ghetto, if I can call it that, of South Yarra and Prahran is copping the heat of the recent violence across the city, with escalating verbal attacks and at least 8 homophobic attacks reported to the Anti-Violence Project Victoria since June. The attacks typically start with verbal assaults from groups of men at a gay couple and then result in further violence. However, these attacks are not reported to police as the 8 that were reported via a confidential phone line. AVP convener Greg Atkins is now urging victims to come forward, and he says, our reports are showing that the Chapel Street area clubs are becoming problematic for gay men in the early hours, and the problem is if you don't report, it's difficult for police to target problem areas. So, I mean, it does seem, in looking at mainstream media, that the city is becoming angrier and violence in the city is becoming a problem. It's quite concerning that is spreading to inner city areas like Commercial Road, where you've got however many gay bars, lots of gay men and lesbians live around that area. It seems to be an increasing problem.
I don't know whether it is increasing or it's being reported in the media. We know what it's like. Something happens and then all of a sudden every story is about that. So you don't know whether it is that or the fact that there is an inner city population. So we are having more people in the city. So and more people out and about. And there is a possibility there are more violent attacks. What disturbs me the most is that these violent attacks against people in our community are not being reported for whatever reason. That's the worst of it, I think.
And remember when we did the show a couple of weeks ago with the gay and lesbian liaison officers, and Gabby was one that was in here saying, if you don't tell us, we can't do anything about it. And whether or not it's because people are fearful of reporting because they don't want to be, you know, outed, or because they don't trust the police, or they don't want to go through the whole process or whatever, it really comes down to, and this has been an age-old problem, that's why the Glows are trying to fight as well, is trying to get people to come forward and say, this has happened to me, can you do something about it?
And the Glows are there for us all. I mean, we've got a show coming up, not till October, on domestic violence, so looking at violence not within our, obviously, the out streets and so forth in the clubs, but actually in the home, and Gabby will be in there for that. So it's a really interesting and scary situation, I think, within Melbourne. It is, And it's horrible to think that Melbourne, if Melbourne is becoming unsafe, I think it's quite sad.
Yeah, well, particularly considering South Yarra Commercial Road, it is well known, it's kind of a two-edged sword, isn't it? Because it's well known as a safe haven in a way, because you know that there are people there who, you know, if you're gay, that's okay, you can go there, people will, you know, will be okay with you. But it's also easy to be a target because everybody knows if you're straight, you've got a bunch of straight boys who've got a few under the belt and decide to go for a bit of, you know, punch drunk happiness, then they're, you know, and they're all, and they decide they'd like to bash up a few poofters for the night. Commercial Road's going to be their first stop.
Well, see, Chapel Street traditionally is a fairly straight area as well. So I suppose you're going to have a bit of mix over into those streets. They come out of some of the clubs in Chapel Street and just wander down there and you know, have give the boys a hard time.
Well, they should
or hang out of there, hotted up Monaro.
Oh, exactly.
Oh, I know. It's just wrong.
Well, those limos.
What about the lesbian couple that who ended up? What was her?
Oh.
We've got the information here. I can't even read it now because I'm just annoyed with her. Go on, Kathy.
Oh, the lesbian, the Welsh lesbian.
The Welsh lesbian.
Speaking of violence, this is one for the Odd File. A Welsh lesbian spent her wedding night in the lockup after she attacked a doorman at the reception for her civil partnership ceremony. I can hardly even read this with a straight face. Right. Sharon Varello, who married her partner Nicola Hooton, were partying with their guests at a wine bar in Swansea, but they all wanted to keep partying past closing time. A dispute started at the door between the guests and the bouncer, and she, Varello, allegedly waded in armed with the red shoe from her wedding outfit. Another guest said, it was a very boozy day and some of the guests were very drunk during the service. And this just sounds like something out of a TV special called Worst Lesbian Weddings Ever.
How trashy.
Trashy and bogany.
It's very bogan. Now, come on, girls. Look, you were asked to leave. It was time to go. You don't hammer with your stiletto.
I don't know what she was thinking, but it would have been a good way to end the night. Oh, I'm just going to crack this man in the skull and then we can go have some more shooters.
Yay!
Woohoo!
Stupid woman.
Crazy.
It's just really distasteful, silly woman.
So, right. Coming to this is a this is an interesting story. Remember, we all remember the National Marriage Day breakfast that was held in the Great Hall at Parliament House recently. This particular occasion marked the 5th anniversary of amendments to the Marriage Act. Well, we're still hot under the collar here about how a bunch of anti-gay Christians could get such a high-profile venue to celebrate an act of Parliament which defines marriage as explicitly between a man and a woman. Now, Sue, you've done some investigation into this and tell us what you found.
I'm so excited with myself. I actually rang Canberra today. I rang Parliament House and said, how do I book the Great Hall?
You idiot.
I did. Now, for a breakfast, lunch, dinner, part-day function, you can book it at $6,000.
Right.
And for a full-day conference, it's 9,000. And then there's a security thing, it's about $2,000. And there's a cleaning fee for the red stiletto kind of issue, $350 or $700. So I reckon we should do it. And I was trying to think of what we would call it. Have you got any ideas?
So this is you're suggesting that we, in retaliation to this celebration of this hideous act that, you know, separates the whole gay community who want to get married from the rest of society, that in retaliation to that, we have one big, massive gay party in Parliament House.
Absolutely.
A big hoot. We can have dykes on bikes on the right.
Yep.
Queers in the rear. We could do so much.
It'd have to be a cocktail party though. None of this breakfast and
breastfest.
Well, they could. Hey, there's an idea. Maybe we could call it breastfest and cocktails.
Yes,
absolutely. Definitely.
I think we should have a breastfest and cocktails. Good evening. This is Hear Me Roar. You're here tonight with Sue, Lisa and Kathy. And just in the studio now, we have Dr. Cookie. Welcome, Dr. Cookie.
Thanks for having me on the show.
That's great to have you back. We interviewed you a while ago, but not on this show. So we've dragged you back into the studio. You're from the Lost Dogs Home. And so we're going to find a bit more about what the Lost Dogs Home and what you do there. But first of all, we started a bit of a discussion, Kathy, about...
Yes, we did. Look, we're talking all pets tonight, four-legged friends, cats, dogs, birds, whatever. And I think we can usually put people into two categories. They like to say they're either a dog person or a cat person. So throughout the show tonight, what we'd like to do is ask our listeners to text in whether they're a dog or a cat person, you know, if they have any questions for you about as a vet or about the Lost Dogs Home, or if people have even adopted a dog from the Lost Dogs Home, it'd be really great to hear those stories. So texting is probably the best way to do that.
We've all got croaky voices today, haven't we? Now, Dr. Cookie, tell us a bit about the Lost Dogs Home.
All right. Well, the Lost Dogs Home, it's been around for a while. In fact, next year we're looking to celebrate our 100th year. So it was founded back in 1910. and it's now Australia's largest animal shelter. We rescue and care for over 20,000 cats and dogs each year, with most of these being reclaimed by their owners. Of course, there's a few that aren't reclaimed, and they have to go through the mandatory 8-day holding period in case their owners come to collect them, and then they're assessed for their suitability to rehouse. So, yeah, we're pretty busy there. We're constantly desexing dogs and cats and giving vaccinations. And
how hard is the process? The 8 days in confinement, I guess, is that the time that they get tested, or is it after that 8-day period?
So, we've got a team of yard staff constantly, you know, surveilling the animals for how they're going, to make sure they're not having any vomiting or diarrhea, not having any, experiencing any medical problems. And then at the end of their 8 days, they actually undergo an assessment with our vet team. So unfortunately, we don't give them, you know, as much time as we'd like to assess them.
Okay.
But it's pretty hard with the volume of animals coming through.
Yeah, you said you must get a lot of animals. I mean, you say that you're the biggest shelter in Australia, and you're certainly the most well-known in Melbourne. How do dogs that have come to you via, do you have a team that goes and picks them up, or do people just come and, you know, and drop them off and say, I found this dog?
Yeah, it's all of those avenues. We have an ambulance that goes out and collects animals that are found wandering the streets, and that operates out of hours with the councils. So there's often a council number people will ring, and then they'll get forwarded the number to call for the animal ambulance. And so, yeah, we've got a 24-hour animal ambulance sort of going around. We've also got all the councils in the various areas have holding facilities where they'll have animals that have been loose during the day and picked up, and then they all end up coming in convoy to us.
Now, I would imagine that you would, I'm making a big assumption here, but you would have some seasonal shifts in however many pets you do receive. And I would imagine after Christmas would be a big time for all those unwanted presents.
Yeah, I mean, after Christmas, for sure. Summertime is really our biggest period, because the cat population really skyrockets. Cats are seasonal breeders, and they start breeding. They're linked to photo periods. So once the summer days get longer and longer, the cats become more and more fertile. And as they do that, the number of cats being bred, you know, can skyrocket through the roof. It's amazing. In summer, we probably get over 100 cats a day coming in to the shelter.
100 cats a day? 100
cats a day.
Where do you put all those cats?
Well, they're all in cat cages, you know, having been caught in cat cages a lot of the time.
Yeah.
And look, unfortunately, a lot of them are feral cats, and a lot of them are kittens that come in with cat flu, with their eyes all gammied up and, you know, not able to breathe because of the upper respiratory infection. So, yeah, it's not pleasant. Summertime, we never look forward to summer. We enjoy the quiet winter months, and then it sort of all goes a bit crazy.
That's amazing. Oh, I can't believe 100 cats. Brian has texted in. Thank you, Brian of Collingwood. He loves the labs that are in the Kleenex ads because they're so cute. So I'm going to put Brian down for dogs. Actually, we should ask ourselves, shouldn't we? Lisa, just nod, because Lisa hasn't got a mic at the moment. Are you dog or cat? Your dog?
Dog.
So it's two for dogs?
Dog, Kathy? Yes, okay. Dog, sorry.
You dog, have to. Dog all the way.
Oh.
Yeah, all right. I've got four dogs.
Four
in the
dogs.
Studio.
Oh. No cats. I like this.
Someone has to make a pussy joke at some point during the show. Please don't disappoint me, listeners. Please don't.
Mrs. Slocum will text in any minute now. Now, what do you do there exactly? Now, we talked a bit about what you do, but what is your role at the Lost Dogs Home?
Yeah, well, I'm one of the senior veterinarians there, and so on a day-to-day basis, I'm involved in doing the surgery, consultations, assessing the animals, and looking after all the injured and stray animals.
That must be so hard. Why did you become a vet?
I ask myself this every day.
Especially in summer.
Well, it's a funny thing. I think you'll find with most vets, it is a passion. You don't become a vet by accident. It's a grueling sort of 5-year course, and to get into it, you need a, you know, huge TER score, or to have blitzed through science and then transfer. And so no one there is really just doing it because they got into it. It's something that most people have wanted to do all their life. They love animals, and yeah, I guess that's where I sit.
With all the vets at the Lost Dogs Home, have you a rotational sort of idea of the kind of work that you do there? I mean, are you only treating certain types of animals, for instance?
No, we're, I mean, we do get some strange animals through. You can never know what's going to come in the door on a day-to-day basis. I think I was telling Sue last time that I've treated a python, my boss has treated a monkey, another friend's treated an elephant and a giraffe. Like, you just never know.
Which is interesting, getting it in the Subaru on the way.
Is that, you don't do any work with the zoo then? Because that just seems like something's escaped and it's ended up in a lost dog's home.
No, we don't do any work with the zoo. We do get, that is a very rare occasion that we'd have to do that. The zoo vets are very highly trained and specialised in their veterinary medicine. So that's something that wouldn't happen very often. I mean, basically we're dogs and cats. We're a normal vet clinic as well, open to the public. So we'll treat anything that anyone brings to us, including wildlife and, lizards, birds, hamsters, guinea pigs, rats, mice. We do get some stray animals come through. I can remember we had a mini pig there the other week, and
we've
had goats and
my chicken. I took my chicken.
We've had chickens.
Yep. I took a chicken with a sore leg.
Do you have chickens at your house?
I do. I'm a lesbian. I have chickens.
Really?
I should say, do you like your free range eggs?
I do.
Yeah, they're great.
But I just like the chicken. I love the way they like sort of peck around the yard and stuff. I'm so holistically not. But yes. I do. I know. She's looking at me going,
it's very organic of you, Sue. I know. I'm just far too inner city for that.
I know. I'm just
that's palaver.
I'm just working out my one sort of little thing on my carbon imprint or whatever they say. But no, I do. I do love that, and I'd love the fact that the clinic is available for all people. And I at first I thought it was just for the lost dogs home, but now since meeting you, I understand that anybody can go in at any time.
Yeah, and the beauty about it, there's the lurgy. So the beauty about it is that if you come to us as your regular vet clinic, we're very reasonably priced in comparison with all the other vet clinics. But not only that, you actually, all the proceeds or all the money, the revenue generated through the clinic goes back into the shelter. So.
Good stuff.
So it's a good idea to come to us as your vet.
So you said before you do a lot of de-sexing. About why de-sex?
De-sexing's very important, especially from where I'm sitting, where I see hundreds of animals, coming through that are neglected, haven't been looked after. There's an overpopulation problem of cats and dogs in Melbourne, and we get a lot of these animals coming through that don't have homes, and a lot of it's to do with breeding that's been occurring because of people not taking responsibility for their pets.
They think it's still cute to have pets.
Now, obviously the lost dogs home, one of your key ideas that you do or things that you do there is rehoming. So what is the process for someone who comes, who has decided, and in the gay and lesbian community, let's be honest, a lot of us are proportionately probably higher than regular people to own pets.
Yeah.
Not all of us have children. Yep. They can be substitutes.
Yeah,
like
absolutely.
Myself.
Lost Dogs Home always has a stall at carnival. And
no, it's awesome.
We do get supported by the gay and lesbian community.
Do you have puppies at the stall, or is it just a high?
No,
look it up?
So what are you talking about?
They have a really mini pig there.
We don't want people to impulse buy.
I know, but you could go and meet them and go, oh, that's so cute. And then you could go home and think about it, and then you could go through the test, and then you could go back.
No.
It's not like a pet store.
No, we're not a pet store. We do promote responsible pet ownership and having thought through this decision to get a pet. But we do have national pet register stores where you can get a free pet tag, generally at carnival and midsummer.
But how does it work for someone who says, right, I want a pet or I want a dog and I don't want to buy a new puppy, I want to go and rescue a dog who hasn't got a home at the moment? How does it go from where to go for anyone who may be interested in looking at getting a pet?
Right, well, the easiest way is to just hop onto our website, which is www.dogshome.com. On the website, you can access all the dogs we currently have in the shelter that are available for adoption.
Mm-hmm.
So you have a look through those. I mean, obviously, everybody has a different sort of set of requirements in the pet that they're looking for. Most people, have small backyards and require smaller dogs, but there's a few people out there that want a big dog that can go running with them, or there's so many different requirements that we do have yard staff that are very experienced if you come in and ask some questions that can point you in the right direction for the right breed.
In a minute, we're just going to have a little bit of a break and listen to a nice little tune. In the news recently, we saw Buckley the dog. So after this, we're going to talk about Buckley the dog. And if you don't remember, he was the dog who had his tail and ears cut off with scissors.
Yeah, horrific.
Sad, sad story. So we'll be back. Hear me roar on Joy 94.9. We've just got a text in from Ania. We adopted our dog Misha from the home 11 years ago, and she's been the most wonderful companion imaginable. And these dogs are lovely. Do you find that sense that, and I'm putting you down on the dog vote, by the way, do you find that these dogs are, do you have that sense of I've been rescued, I've been saved?
Definitely our dogs, appreciate where they've come from. They definitely develop a very strong bond with their new owner. We see it time and time again when they come back for their 1 month later vaccination. They're so attached to their owner. They really do come into their own. They've put on condition. They're looking great. And it is fantastic to see that.
And we've got another text in, Kathy.
This is a great story. We got a call from Ian from Essendon. He said he's got a beautiful Staffy Cross from North Melbourne Dog Home. And when he got it home, it sniffed one of his other dogs, shot into the bedroom, curled up and immediately went to sleep. He definitely thinks it's a good thing to get a dog from a home instead of a pet shop. And that's an interesting topic too, whether or not obviously there's a good thing about adopting a dog that doesn't have a home, and we've talked about needs of owners as well as needs of the dog. But now, what are your thoughts on pet shop?
Well, I'm obviously not in favour of them, pretty much because we have an endless supply of dogs that come in off the street that need homes, and pet shops they're basically puppy farmers that are breeding puppies constantly for a market that then needs filling, and people are then see these puppies in pet shops. They're cute, they're adorable when they're young. They then make an impulse buy with the puppy, and then it ends up 6 to 12 months later back in our home because it hasn't been looked after. No, they don't know anything, the first thing about looking after a dog, and it's been neglected, and then suddenly isn't a good dog to be around.
Talking about neglected, let's get on to Buckley the dog. Now, he was a high-profile dog at the Lost Dogs Home. Could you tell us a bit more about him?
Yep. So Buckley came in a couple of months ago and received a lot of immediate media attention because it was a horrific case of animal cruelty, the likes of which we haven't seen for a long, long time. He came in with both his ears chopped off with scissors and his tail chopped off right near the base of the tail. Yeah, it was shocking to see. I mean, a puppy, an 8-week-old puppy, is a defenseless creature, and to just the sort of person that would be capable of doing that is not the sort of person that we want in our society.
It's incomprehensible, isn't it, Kathy?
Do you know who did it? Do you know that it was cut with scissors? Like, I'm not up to speed on that.
Yeah, I mean, it's a bit hard to get to the bottom of that because, the person that did it was caught and underwent psychiatric assessment, and I think there's obviously issues there that we don't know about, and it hasn't been publicised, and that person probably for their own safety needs to be kept quiet. Being in jail with that sort of reputation is not a good thing either.
So what's happened to Buckley since he arrived? What kind of treatment did he go through?
So we had to do an operation on his ears and his tail because it was, pretty much hacked off in a horrible way. We had to tidy up his ears so that they now look like ears more than ragged, stumps. And we, obviously he had intensive antibiotic treatment to ensure they didn't get infected. And now he's almost healed up now.
Now, Buckley's become something of a media star, and you just said off air that he've had a visit from a very high-profile footballer and an incredible amount of people that have wanted to adopt him.
Yeah, we've been overwhelmed by the response. People sending their teddy bears in to be with him while he convalesced, and people sending in donations. And we set up a Buckley scholarship fund for him because we were getting so many donations for people requesting that it went to him and his recovery, because of course it is a long, slow recovery process now for a dog that's been affected during that very critical period of its life when it's that young. I mean, dogs are very impressionable from sort of the 7 to 14 week age group, and he was right in that age range when he was attacked, I guess. And so he needs to go through a great deal of rehab with and training and learning to trust humans again.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, obviously, people were really interested in helping Buckley, but I'm sure that they're interested in helping the Lost Dogs Home. How can people do that? Can you donate blankets and, like I said, toys? How do you actually go about doing that kind of thing?
Yeah, absolutely. There's so many ways you can support the home. Donating cash is obviously one thing, and you can do that by recalling the home on 93292755. Listing the home in your will is another way. We get a lot of bequests in that way that really do help us do our work. Of course, adopting a dog or cat from us is also supporting us, and instead of going to a breeder or a pet shop. Donating toys, collars, blankets, food bowls, you know, towels. We go through a lot of towels and blankets in the day-to-day care of these animals, and of course there's lots of things being soiled all the time, so we do have a high rate of throwing the things out too. So,
and it is very easy to be a donor. I'm actually a Lost Dogs Home donor, so they just sort of deduct, you know, a monthly amount. You can nominate whatever you like. It's interesting you say there's a lot of you know, a way to do it is to bequeath money in your will. I read something recently about all these really elderly women who are donating millions, like their entire fortunes, to animal shelters and that kind of, like, pets just really inspire that kind of, you know, generosity. And I know you read the crazy stories about people who leave all their money to their dog, but, you know, so doing something like that is probably, that's quite cool.
It's amazing, but you'd be pretty annoyed, wouldn't you, if you look here and you go, Mum's got 7 million. What do you get? You get the
T-shirt.
So let's finish off, because we are running out of time. So just a couple more things. Do you have any words of advice for people who are looking for a dog or a cat? Actually, look, well, 6 people are looking for dogs at the moment. Nobody, according to our votes, looking for a cat.
Nobody's a cat person out there. No. And nobody has given me my pussy joke either.
Come on, Mrs. Slocum.
Joy, listeners.
So what words of advice do you have for people looking for a pet?
Well, it's a big decision. It's not one that you should rush into. I really recommend coming down to the Lost Dogs Home, having a chat to our staff, have a look around the place, have a look at our adoption pens and see what's available at the moment. It really is a matter of also being prepared to log onto the website every day, because every day we have a high turnover of dogs. So every day there's a different set of animals on the website. If you're lucky, you can get in quickly, ring up, put the animal on hold that you're interested in, come in the next day and meet it. If you've got other pets, you know, bring your other dog in to meet it too, to make sure they get along. We do allow that. We have a special area for that to occur. And yeah, we take it from there. We get you to fill out a survey as well to pretty much work out your requirements and match you up to the right dog.
Now, Dr. Cookie, I know that you do a lot of, you know, you do a lot of observation with the dogs that come in, and you said there's an 8-day period where if the owner doesn't collect it after then, you assess the animal to see whether it can be rehomed. I am a person who has a dog with severe behaviour issues. Like, I like to call him autistic in a very sort of funny way. He's very scared of the world. He's quite nervous, and so can be a bit snappy. So, you know, he's had a therapist, and, you know, look, I won't go into the boring story, but Monkey, I love you, but sometimes, sweetie, you know, I just want to give you up. But which I never would, because he's beautiful, but he is a handful. Now, for someone who, I know you do your assessments, but that's the thing with getting a dog from a Lost Dogs Home, you don't know the dog's history or the cat's history. And like the example with Buckley, you obviously know what's happened to him. If you do all you say, find the dog, book him in online, come and meet him, all works well, and then you go home and it just doesn't work, what happens then?
Yeah, look, we have a period, a cool-off period, if you will, where basically in the 2 weeks to a month afterwards, if it's not working out, we don't want to put you through stress or the animal through stress. We will take the animal back, and if you need another animal, we'll work that out for you.
Okay, so it's like a money-back guarantee,
I guess we don't encourage people to swap their dogs on a week-to-week basis to find the right one. It really is a decision that we like everyone to be comfortable with and certain about before they go ahead with it. It's a situation. It happens occasionally, and in all honesty, it doesn't happen as often as you might imagine.
Oh, that's good.
Most of our animals have been, you know, very thoroughly checked, both medically and behaviourally. And, you know, I like to think we do a good job ensuring that, you know, they're not going to be dogs that are going to bite other dogs or people or kids. So we do have dogs that are pretty – well, we'd like to try and make them bomb-proof. It's impossible, but, you know, that in any situation with any person, they're going to be okay.
Kathy, your dream has come true.
Grant from Melbourne, I love you. He says, look, I love cats. He's the only person who has voted for cats, by the way, tonight. He says, I love cats. Only pussy I'm interested in. Little giggle on the end. Thank you. Grant.
Thank you, Dr. Cookie. Can you just give us the details for the Lost Dogs Home?
Sure. We're at 2 Gracie Street in North Melbourne, just behind the Arden Street football ground. Our phone number is 9329 2755, and we have a website, great website to have a look at, www.dogshome.com.
Good evening. This is Hear Me Roar with Sue, Kathy and Lisa. That was a great segment looking at our pets, wasn't it?
Yeah, I had fun doing that. That was really good. We got a lot of response too from people out there. And honestly, like when we were going through and workshopping topics, pets was just right up there really. It's just one of those easy ones you can do because everybody in the gay community seems to have a pet, whether it's a Shih Tzu or a Staffy or a goldfish or something. Actually, we got one last SMS from Gordon, lovely Gordon. He says he used to have 2 cats. Unfortunately, they gave him asthma. Ungrateful wretches. There's a smiley face into that. He says his partner and I now have a Staffy cross Mastiff, basically a very big Staffy. They got from the RSPCA over 2 years ago and she's adorable. She's a bit mental if she sees another dog, but great with people. I can certainly empathise there. Monkey's not a dog person either.
Oh,
he loves other people.
Well, I will put Gordon down as dog then. So it's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 for dog and 1 pussy.
Yep. From a gay man.
From a gay man.
I love the show.
Oh, I love it. Now, we're doing a follow-up. Grant, who's a lovely jeweller and a very sexy man, we've seen photos, he sent in a text. We were talking last week about the medical system and a patient who was given a new wristband which had a blue line.
Yes.
Now, I have since contacted a nurse friend of mine and she said there is no way that should have been done, that mm-hmm. there is no visual recognition system of a person with HIV. There are, of course, information on their records which is not public, you know, to everybody else to see. So she said that was a really unusual case. Grant suggested that we actually listen to the point of view of the doctors and find out their opinions, which would be great, but we have no idea who they are. But if you are a doctor with any sort of information on that, we'd love to hear about it.
So the blue line, recap me, was basically identifying him as a HIV positive man.
Yeah, he came out as saying he was HIV. They made comment that he shouldn't be in the food industry and his bracelet changed to a band with a blue mark on it.
I can't wait till we find a cure for AIDS and HIV.
Can't wait.
And then it'll be just like, you know, consumption was in the 1800s.
Yeah.
And, you know, all those kind of other infections. There's so much rubbish going around about how you can contract HIV and AIDS.
It should become a public health issue rather than what it is, which is a homophobic related thing. I've been talking to positive women throughout the week and we've got a show coming up about women living with HIV. So that will be really interesting and very hard also. Now, coming up next week, we're talking grief. We're actually not doing the sad bits. We're celebrating life and the rituals that we do to cope with loss, all the nice things that we do at funerals and things like that. Future weeks, we've got Wire coming on and we're the experiences of home for the GLBTIQ TPA.
Supercalifragilisticexpialidocious.
Oh, God. Okay. So check out our podcast. Follow the Joy website for our blog, joy.org.au. We'll see you, hear you, whatever, next week.
Sounds great. Thanks, everybody, for texting in and see you next time.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.